This is Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson here with you. It's Prop Points on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Even though this is, I saw on Twitter today, Jeff, somebody called this one of the worst days of the sports calendar. We still have a packed show coming your way over the next hour. I don't know if I would go that far, by the way. I think the Home Run Derby alone is still a draw. We got NBA Summer League starting up this afternoon. Nonetheless, like we said, a loaded show coming your way, including some Summer League talk with our guy Alex Barutha. Talk about how all the rookies are looking so far, some of the second-year guys we're keeping an eye on. This time of year, Jeff, we love squeezing in some NFL futures talks. We'll have Alan Sislowski from rotowire.com giving us some of his favorite player futures. Talk a little fantasy with him as well. We'll have our best bets. We'll give you some derby plays later in the show. But I do want to start, Jeff, with the World Cup. And look, I think part of the reason this is a quiet day, not only do we have the baseball all-star break, but we have a little bit of a break in the World Cup before the round of four. The semifinals begin tomorrow. But over the weekend, we saw Spain beat Belgium. We saw England, of course, take down Norway 2-1. Argentina survives on Saturday night against Switzerland. And we have set up now for what kind of feels like the equivalent of like 4-1 seeds making the final four in the NCAA tournament. I know the sting of how Team USA went out a week ago, I think is starting to fade a little bit. And if you're a soccer fan, you got to be thrilled with the four teams we have remaining.
Yeah, if you like the stars, you're going to see plenty of stars here. I think the only like disappointment might be like that Erling Haaland came up small in the England game there. I think that's more a function of what England did to him as opposed to what he did personally. But absolutely, yeah, it's the four betting favorites in the final four, you know, the top seeds, if you will, from each bracket. And I wonder if the 48-team format might have helped enhance that a little bit more. It's easier for top teams to win their groups. We saw, for the most part, the top teams did win their groups. And as a matter of fact, you know, Portugal is like a notable exception, I think. But and also, for that matter, like most of the number two seeds in their group also advanced to the knockout range rounds. I think like Uruguay was the notable exception to that, is not even getting to the knockouts there. We saw very few upsets in the next round of games. I think Germany being, again, a noteworthy exception. But for the most part, you know, it made it so that the field was thinned a little bit earlier on. We didn't get the big battles until we got to the round of 16, to the quarterfinals. There were a couple of changes, you know, noteworthy things here and there. But for the most part, I think it's structured more so that the top teams can advance. Now it's a battle of attrition. Now we're seeing so many of these top teams have key players missing these games. You look at, for instance, Morocco against France. They were down two players to enter the tournament. They lost their top striker for that game against France. They lost another player, you know, right before the game. They were down four starters for that game, and it kind of showed in the type of style that they had to play, unfortunately, in that game. You know, you look at a couple other teams in similar situations there where we didn't necessarily get their best at the very end. Now it's a matter of who can get through, who can be the healthiest as we get to these final four games. I can't, you know, these final four teams, excuse me. I can't wait for Tuesday. By the way, worst sports time on the calendar has to be Wednesday night. You know, World Cup is done. The British Open hasn't started yet. There are no baseball games. People are going to try to force you to watch the ESPYs. I mean, come on. That's going to be the worst. That's the absolute worst. I mean, I'll watch Summer League. Summer League's going to be a willing watch for me. I'm going to be excited about that on Wednesday night because that'll be the best thing on for sure.
Well, yeah, fasten your seatbelts because we get Bucks Hornets on Wednesday night. We get Celtics Kings as well. Hopefully have Darren Peterson back in action for Jazz Spurs. All eyes will be on the Summer League on Wednesday night. And again, we'll have Alex Barutha with his Summer League takeaways joining us in just a little bit. So, Jeff, if we look at these semifinal games, France, a minus 155 favorite to advance over Spain. Spain sitting plus 125. England, not quite as heavy of a favorite against Argentina, minus 135. But I think on paper, both of these games feel like toss-ups. Is either of those lines speaking to you right now? Are you looking at the World Cup winner market? Is there value in the golden boot right now where we have both Mbappe and Messi sitting on eight goals, but Harry Kane, Jude Bellingham lurking at six, both of those guys 10 and 14 to one respectively?
So this is where I get a little imposter syndrome because I don't really bet soccer that much. I'm a huge fan. I follow the game, but you know, it's one of those there. Last week, we talked a little bit more about Bellingham and how he might pass Kane. Well, they're now he's now tied with Kane. That one's, but basically for any future for him, it would involve England beating Argentina and then moving on and winning in the final, I think, for him to have a chance to catch Mbappe, who, that's going to be the interesting one there to see that in terms of the Golden Boot. I would think that Mbappe probably has the best odds. But, I mean, this France-Spain game, this is by no means a gimme for France. By no means at all. Spain, in fact, is the last team to beat France. So I think from looking from it from that standpoint, they're pretty dangerous. Pretty dangerous team indeed. I hear a lot of talk about this being the equivalent of Thunder Spurs, France versus Spain being, is this truly the final? Guess how that ended, by the way. So maybe we shouldn't probably be, maybe that analogy is pretty poor in a couple of different avenues there. But I'm excited about both of these games. I think England will beat Argentina. I do think that will probably, I think that'll probably be the case, but we'll see. I mean, this is clearly a step up in class for Argentina in terms of the level of opponent that they've had to play. I think England has had to have a tougher path to get to this spot, and that's maybe why they're favored in this instance here. But I think they're the better team.
Folks, you want to bet smarter? Then you need RotoWire. Our brand new smart money tool shows you exactly where sharp action is moving, so you're always on the right side of the line. And that's just the start. RotoWire's award-winning staff gives you rankings, projections, real-time injury updates, and data-driven insights across every sport every day. Whether you're handicapping games, crushing your fantasy leagues, or both, RotoWire has you covered. Check out rotowire.com right now. Use our promo code VSIN, V-S-I-N. Put that in at checkout to get you 15% off anything we offer. That's rotowire.com, promo code B-S-I-N. It's time to start thinking about those fantasy football drafts. Now is a great time to activate that 15% off at rotowire.com. So, Jeff, we are officially at the All-Star break. Had a full slate of Major League Baseball games yesterday. I would prefer not to discuss how the Milwaukee Brewers are heading into the break. A sickening end to that series against Pittsburgh yesterday. They gave up 10 runs in the fourth inning. But on the contrary, Jeff, the Boston Red Sox, who I think we had gotten close to leaving them for dead multiple times throughout the first half, they're showing some signs of life. They had that big series against the Yankees a couple weeks ago. They end the first half on a 9-game winning streak, now just a half game out for the final wild card in the American League. Red Sox currently plus 145 to make the playoffs.
Yeah, all this talk about Sonny Gray being dealt at the trade deadline, Aroldis Chapman being dealt at the trade deadline. Could we shift to thinking maybe that the Red Sox are buyers? I mean, welcome to life in the American League. And that's the thing, that because, there are very few teams that pulled away. Yeah, the Red Sox are viable to make the playoffs. And once you get to the tournament, we've seen definitely things have happened. They had a similar run last year. It started a little bit later, but it was around the All-Star break where they won 10 games in a row, and that got them into this picture where they got into the playoffs. The question is, what sort of damage can they do once they get to the playoffs? Do they have the bats for that there? I still question that. Still question that a little bit there, and obviously you have to. I mean, they've only scored 385 runs this year. They've also only allowed 358. So they're historically good in terms of run – not historically – but uniquely good in run prevention right now. That's one of the things they've become a better pitching team than the Yankees, which is hard to say. They're now plus 27 in terms of run differential. And this, despite not having Garrett Crochet, who's not even throwing yet. Yeah, this is despite them losing Connolly early just recently as well. Brian Bello got sent down. He came back in long relief the other day. But they've gotten such good pitching from the likes of Peyton Tolley, Jake Bennett, who got the call up and has now kind of established himself. Ranger Suarez is on the IL now, and that hasn't seemed to matter. Patrick Sandoval pitched pretty well in his last time. They have all these left-handed starting pitchers when a lot of teams don't have a single one. The Red Sox have multiple ones there and even injured ones there. We'll see if they get Crochet for the stretch run. It could be the proverbial getting Crochet back is our trade deadline acquisition. But we all know they need to add a bat. I think in the playoffs, this won't play as well. They're doing well against some of this lesser competition, but they've changed the dialogue with them for sure.
So we get the All-Star game itself tomorrow night, Home Run Derby tonight, Jeff, and a pretty star-studded 8-man field. I think of this as kind of the equivalent of the dunk contest in the NBA, and we could spend a lot of time talking about how that event has devolved, how the NBA has to pluck guys out of the G League to headline that. Not the case for the Home Run Derby, where we have Kyle Schwarber, Junior Caminero, Munetaka Murakami, Jordan Walker, Jack Caglione, Bryce Harper, Ben Rice, and Wilson Contreras as our eight-man field. Kyle Schwarber, your betting favorite at plus 285. Contreras, your long shot at 14-1. So when you start to think about betting the Home Run Derby, which could be kind of a vibes-based event, you know, you're not necessarily putting the same amount of research into that as you would a normal Major League Baseball play. But what are some of the things we need to consider before betting the Derby tonight?
So I look at park factor as one, because even though, you know, these are all, they can hit the ball at a Yellowstone Park, not every ball is going to be hit like that. You know, you're going to need a little bit of help. And good news for all these left-handed hitters is that Citizens Bank Ballpark is uniquely friendly for left-handed power hitters. 132 park factor, four home runs for left-handed hitters, second highest in baseball, according to the Baseball Savant park factors there. Right-handers, it's average, 99. So it's not like this is going to prevent the top hitters, right-handed hitters, from hitting it out. But there is a boost. I remember back in Coors, when they had it at Coors Field, there was an advantage for right-handed hitters that got underlooked in the betting market. I think that might be the case here a little bit, except, you know, Schwarber's the obvious betting favorite here, and I think he should be. I think rightfully so. But who wants to bet favorites? That's not fun. I kind of like Jack Caglione at 7-1 because of that. I think exit velocity, max exit velocity are two things. I know you mentioned that in your best bet, which will come later on. We'll talk about that as a factor as well.
We'll have some plays for the Home Run Derby to wrap up the show. We are switching things over to the NBA Summer League. Alex Barutha, our senior NBA editor at RotoWire, joining us when we come back. You're watching Prop Points here on VSiN.
So you're listening to this podcast because you want an edge. But what if I told you you're only halfway there? You've got the mindset. Now it's time to get the toolkit to match. Here's the thing. Pro bettors spend thousands on data and tools, but what they don't want you to know is that you can get the same edge for a fraction of the cost with VSiN Pro. With VSiN Pro, you'll get access to expert picks, public betting data, prop projections, powerful tools, analytics, and more. Just tap the link in the description and see why thousands of bettors are already using VSiN Pro to cash more bets.
Watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Nick Whalen, Jeff Erickson back with you. It's the Monday edition of Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. We, of course, have the Home Run Derby and the Major League Baseball All-Star Break coming our way later tonight. We'll give you some plays for the Derby a little bit later in the show, but Summer League rolling on out in Las Vegas. Day five begins in a couple hours. Pistons-Knicks is our first game of the day. We'll be treated to Raptors-Pacers in the afternoon window as well. And to give us some plays for the Monday slate, as well as look back on what we've seen so far, we welcome in our senior NBA editor at RotoWire, our good pal Alex Barutha, joining us via the Progressive Guest Line. Alex, let's start with some of the big-name rookies. You know, this is a pretty loaded summer league, especially if you compare it to years past. It feels like every other game, you know, there's somebody that you want to make sure to keep an eye on. I think we have to start with Caleb Wilson, though. You know, in a summer league that began really with AJ DeBonsa versus Darren Peterson, and you know, we have some other big name rookies. I think Caleb Wilson has officially stolen the show. It's going to be very, very difficult for him to top what we saw on Friday night.
It is, yeah. I mean, he was excellent. Looked great from three. Obviously, made a ton of his shots there. Some of that's going to be luck. I don't really expect him to shoot that well going forward. I think I had more belief than a lot of other people in his just general ability to shoot threes. I mean, he made a lot of, in college, he made a lot of tough, like, long mid-range shots, especially, you know, turnarounds from the post and stuff like that. So I was like, if he can do this and hit these at a pretty efficient clip, he should be able to shoot threes, even though they didn't ask him to do it a lot then. So I do think he will continue to fire away. And yeah, just athletically looked fantastic. Was a menace on defense as well. Was really affecting the game on both ends of the floor. You know, he needs to, like, you can nitpick all you want and say, well, he needs to improve as a playmaker and all this other stuff. But yeah, I mean, just an amazing show out from him and clear why he was the, you know, sort of basically in Sharpie as the number four pick in this draft.
All politics are local, Alex. You're a Bucks fan. Your impressions on Braden Burry so far? Seems like he's done well, even getting starlight calls, ref treatment already.
Yeah, you know, there's a play that went viral of him, you know, with a really nice, fully underhand carry. And hey, if the refs don't call it, like you have star potential. They clearly were just, you know, giving him a whistle already. But look, zero turnovers also for Braden Burry so far in the summer league, which is an amazing stat considering how turnover laden these games are. Not only just from like a you know, offensive perspective where teams are a bit disorganized and you're not always sure where guys are going to be, it's not as set up. But summer league is littered with these just like crazy intense defenders as well, who are not like necessarily NBA caliber players, well-rounded, but will just hound guys up the court. And as the reason they are in summer league. So the fact that Burry doesn't have any turnovers is great. And not only that, he's been shooting really well. He's been showing off driving ability, which he didn't get to do a ton because there was poor spacing when he was in college. And the three ball looks good. And he's, you know, and part of the sell on him was like, okay, maybe this is not the highest upside player because he's, you know, he's not that, he doesn't have great length or, you know, bounce out the gym athleticism, but he is such a strong defender as well. And he's affecting the game on that side of the ball. And I think that's a great culture setter for a Bucks team. That's just, they need some sort of culture post Giannis. They've lost so many guys from those championship teams. They just aren't there anymore. So Burry's as a rookie, I think, can be a huge part of helping this team move forward in a positive way.
Yeah, Burry's been a very nice bright spot for what was a tough watch. If you tuned into that Bucks Summer League game last night, 10 points in the first quarter for Milwaukee, which is very, very difficult to do given the level of defense being played in a lot of these games. We are chatting with Alex Barutha, our senior NBA editor at RotoWire, stopping by the Progressive guest line. Alex, I want to ask you about Keaton Wagler, who, you know, statistically looked a lot better last night in game two for the Clippers than he did in game one. First time out, only went 1 of 7 from the field, just really wasn't overly involved. We did see some more volume. You know, we saw a little bit more activity last night for Wagler, but based on the text messages that you were sending me during that game last night, Alex, I know you're still a little bit skeptical on what we've seen from Wagler so far.
Yeah, I mean, he had a good third quarter. We'll start with that. He hit some open shots. I think he had some good defensive moments as well. And one thing that stood out for me, you know, rewatching a lot of the tape was just like, he made good passes. And defenses are keyed in on him. You know, it's not like defenses are ignoring him. Now, plenty of defenses are also keyed in on Darren Peterson and AJ DiBonzo, who have looked fine. But I think it's really easy to look at the box score and watch highlights from the Wagler game and be like, this is fantastic. Look at all these shots he's making and stuff like that. If you really break down and watch all of his possessions, there are still plenty of issues that I think were more clear in the first game where people were more focused on it because he did not have 20 plus points like he did in this game. He still cannot consistently get by guys. There are a few plays where he's just not decisive enough. You know, he's already been blocked on 2-point jump shots twice in summer league, guys just flying in from behind because he's not quick enough to shoot these shots. When he's in the lane, he's kind of not physical enough and not athletic enough, and he gets trapped under the basket sometimes. Yeah, a couple air balls in this game. Like, I think you can sort of see what you want to see at times with Wagler. So I try not to be too negative about him, but his performance, especially if you just watch the first half of this game, it was really just not very good. I think it will help him actually being off ball a little bit more with Darius Garland and some other NBA talent, and he can focus on, you know, getting open threes and guys will close out hard to him and he can drive off of that. It is going to be a work in progress. I think I don't expect him to just jump into the NBA and be like, oh, this guy's scoring 14, 15 a game. I don't think it's going to be that easy for him necessarily.
Alex, is Darius Acuff already the perfect Sacramento King? He's got his numbers. He's got his usage, but not super efficient, not so great on defense either.
Yeah, look, it's been a long time since I've seen a player with his lack of engagement when the ball is not on his side of the floor. Like, he just like is standing fully upright, shoulders kind of slouched, and just like walking around when the ball is not on his side of the floor or he's not like one pass away on both ends of the court. And like, that's concerning, obviously. Like that was a big issue coming into the draft, which people are like, well, you know, maybe, I don't know, maybe they'll be fixed when he gets in the NBA. And it's like, well, not so far in summer league. That has not been fixed. He is focused on defense. When the guy he's guarding has the ball, he's actually a pretty good defender. Like, it's not very often a guy actually one-on-one blows by him and makes him look bad. He's good there, but other times he's not engaged. Offensively, I mean, he's had some moments where you're like, okay, that's a nice finish, and he, you know, nice move, and he pull up jumper. It just doesn't stand out to me as much as I would like. I think he is a little reliant on like these. He plays off 1 foot a lot going to the basket, and he's pretty small actually. Physically he looks like he's bigger than he is when you actually see him on the court and they like zoom out. And he gets caught like too far away from the basket, jumping off 1 foot a lot, which doesn't work against NBA length and athleticism and the way it probably worked in college. But I do think another guy like Wagler, you know, you get in a system with Domantas Sabonis, who's going to feed you these just great passes off of curls and back cuts. I think he'll look good. But there are, again, more things that he has to work out as well in terms of like some better playmaking, some better shot selection, being more engaged on defense, things like that.
There are no shortage of betting opportunities this summer, from daily Major League Baseball and World Cup soccer to the countdown to football season. That's why now is the perfect time to lock in VSiN's football special for just $175. You get full VSiN Pro access all the way through the Super Bowl, including the all-new 2026-27 NFL betting guide to help you attack futures, win totals, division races, and the upcoming season at large. Plus, you'll get daily best bets, real-time betting splits from DraftKings and Circa, AI-powered prop projections, 24/7 video on the VSiN Watch app, and coverage of every major sport all year long. And remember, the earlier you sign up, the more value you get. Head to VSiN.com/subscribe right now. That's VSiN.com/subscribe. Chatting with Alex Barutha from RotoWire.com on the Progressive Guest Line, helping us break down all things NBA Summer League. Alex, we got about a minute left before we let you go. I know you got a couple plays in pocket for the Monday Vegas slate.
Yeah, a couple of quick ones. Grizzlies -9.5 over the Dallas Mavericks. Look, the Grizzlies are playing like practically their real team out there. And so you got Cam Boozer, and you got Cedric Coward out there, and Javon Small. It's hard not to like the line given who they're playing out there. And then Atlanta Hawks -4.5 over the Boston Celtics. Kingston Flemings has looked great, you know, not necessarily as a scorer, hasn't tapped in, but as a passer has looked fantastic. You got Zubi Ejiofor as a defender. Again, just another team that's playing a lot more of their sort of real rotation and high level prospects compared to the Boston Celtics.
There we have it. Great stuff as always from our guy, Alex Barutha. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter @BaruthaAlex. Find all of his world-class NBA coverage on the betting side, on the fantasy side, for us over at rotowire.com. We got to take a break. We'll switch things over to the National Football League when we come back. Talk a little fantasy football. We'll talk some NFL player futures with our guy, Alan Sislowski. That's coming up next. You're watching Prop Point.
Watching Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back into Prop Points here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Going back out to the Progressive Guest Line. It's Double Guest Monday here on Prop Points, and we welcome back our good friend Alan Sislowski, one of our fantasy football experts at rotowire.com, at Alan Sislowski on Twitter, on X. Alan, you joined us last week. You gave us some great, what I would call early fantasy football advice, what you might call late in your world, because I know you are drafting year-round. But we'll get some more fantasy takes from you, and we'll start, though, with some player futures, which, of course, we could tie into a little fantasy talk. And I want to start with a wide receiver yardage number that I know you like. Chris Godwin, who, of course, has missed a ton of time for Tampa Bay over the last couple of years, should be fully healthy to start 2026. His yardage prop coming in at 699.5.
Yeah, it's hard to make the over bet on someone like Godwin, because what we know about overs is that you're also betting, you know, for health instead of against health. That's not the extra edge that you have there. But the last two seasons were unhealthy recovery seasons for Chris Godwin, so he missed this prop by a mile. But four of the last five previous to that, he went well over 1,000 yards, and now number one target Mike Evans is now out of town, no longer on the team. And Baker Mayfield, let's not forget, guys, was on an MVP pace last year before he got a little dinged up there. I think if healthy, and I know we say that a lot, and that's the key to these over bets, Godwin smashes this number. He's not 35 years old. He's like, you know, so he's still in the late peak of his career. We've already seen him do it. This number is not a stretch. I really like hammering the over. I've made the bet already.
Alan, I've seen a lot of helium with A.J. Brown ever since it was known that he was going to go to the Pats. And then when it became official, it really rocketed. I saw him going as early as eighth overall in one of the drafts that I was in. You have a prop on him at 1,124.5 receiving yards. Fell short of that number the last 2 years, but the first 2 years in Philly was over 1,400 number yards. You think it'll be closer to that in New England?
Yeah, I think A.J. Brown wanted to go to a team. He was very vocal about that, where he was going to be that 150 target player. That's what normal alpha wide receivers get. That's always been a problem in AJ Brown's career, even going back to Tennessee, and certainly what ended his days in Philly. Now, if he gets that 150, which is not that outrageous, and his career average of about 9.8 yards per target, and say that even drops to 9, do the math. That's still well over 1,350 yards. Again, health is not on your side when you're betting overs here, but 1,350 yards, I think this, I mean, he's going to blow that 1,124 out the gate here. So I'm going to take the over there. I think he's going to go way over.
Talk with Alan Sisolowski, fantasy football expert for us at rotowire.com, joining via the Progressive guest line. All right, so I'm with you on both of those. Now, we like the over on yardage for both Chris Godwin and A.J. Brown. Here's where we're starting to get into some real value, a 40-1 player future. So please, you have the floor. Sell us on why David Montgomery could lead the NFL in rushing touchdowns this year.
Yeah, I mean, let's we got to make some of these bet a little and win a lot. Those pizza bets, man, that's one of my favorite right here. Now, is this likely to happen? No, but you just talked about the odds. So David Montgomery, who was always the 1B for the last couple of years to Jahmyr Gibbs on the Detroit Lions, is now in that old Joe Mixon role on the Houston Texans. And that's a run and play defense type of team. It's not like CJ Stroud is going to throw 50 touchdowns this year. So David Montgomery, I think, is when they get in close, I mean, that's going to be their guy. The backup running backs on the team are behind him on the depth chart. Woody Marks, who is more of a pass catching threat. And then, I mean, there's really nobody else of consequence that's going to steal touches from him. So David Montgomery, similar to, you know, Joe Mixon, who was a high volume, high scoring running back, I think you could see one of those like outlier 17, 20 touchdown seasons from David Montgomery, who is going to get all the work he can handle in the Houston Texans. Take a little sprinkle on him. I love the odds.
We're talking with RotoWire's Florida man, Alan Sisolowski. We're going to talk a little Justin Herbert here next. There, you like a bet on him for the most touchdown passes in the NFL at 22-1.
I mean, the consensus is everyone likes the Chargers, mostly because new offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel, formerly the coach of the Miami Dolphins, is going to be, you know, running that offense. And Herbert's always been an elite quarterback, had some injuries on the offensive line last year, which kind of derailed their season a little bit. And, you know, the pass catching core is pretty solid there. They even add like backup tight ends like David Njoku, who was a starter on another team. They have Aronde Gatson, who broke out last year. Quentin Johnston, the wide receiver, is getting a lot of hype already in the offseason. And Ladd McConkey, who's a fantasy football favorite. I mean, he's just going to be a monster in the middle of the field as well. So Justin Herbert at 22-1, I think that there's a chance here. I think his odds should be more like 13-1 or 12-1. So if it's 22-1, I'm going to take that right there. Justin Herbert leads the league in touchdown passes.
Let's transition over to the fantasy side of things, Alan, and I will remind the viewers, again, put in that code VSIN, V-S-I-N, at rotowire.com. Get yourself 15% off anything we offer. This is the perfect time to jump in, get maximum value as we head into fantasy football season. But you've put together a nice list of, you know, players who changed teams this offseason and guys who I think for the most part you view as now in an upgraded situation. Talk to me a little bit about Jalen Waddle, who I keep seeing getting pushed up the board. Maybe not quite as extreme as what we've seen with A.J. Brown, but start to sneak into the third round in some expert drafts.
Yeah, Jalen Waddle, formerly on the Miami Dolphins, now gets traded for a first-round pick to the Denver Broncos. And when players change teams, especially wide receivers, you know, sometimes there's going to be an adjustment period right there. And, you know, you have to kind of pick and choose which ones you're going to attack. Jalen Waddle, I mean, he's done it in all different ways in the NFL. He had a season where he had like over 100 catches and caught all the short stuff. And then he had, you know, another season where he did it with down the field type of plays. So I think Jalen Waddle's already proven he's an elite receiver in this league. Kind of been forgotten about a little bit since there was two seasons in Miami where the whole infrastructure just imploded. So Jalen Waddle, I think that Sean Payton, the coach of the Denver Broncos, has targeted him. Now, there's some fear that Cortland Sutton, who's the incumbent 1A, is going to maybe take away a little bit from Jalen Waddle. But I think that there's two sides when you talk about fantasy. There's would you rather have nobody else on the team and then all the coverage gets shifted to you? Or would you rather have someone competent on the other side of the field as a wide receiver to at least spread out the coverage? Jalen Waddle's price is expensive, but I do understand here. He's only 27 years old, guys. And in fantasy football, like you said, you're going to have to pay up to find out. It probably is worth it. I'm taking Jalen Waddle in that late third round, early fourth round if you get lucky in a draft.
Kenneth Walker was the Chiefs' big offseason acquisition. Finally upgrading that running back room. Are you drafting him at the 1-2 turn? How early are you willing to go to get to add Kenneth Walker to your roster?
I mean, guys, for years, all we wanted was Chiefs running back, right? Finally, we get a Super Bowl MVP running back that gets signed for big money. I think the average annual salary was around $16 million or so, and there's really nobody else behind him to take touches. Now, the bear case against Kenneth Walker on the Chiefs is that he's never been able to hold a full workload. He's been a little injury prone. All those things are true, but you know, those things are true until they aren't, right? If he gets a healthy season, and last year, I don't even think he missed much time, if at all, any, you know? So I really like the price on Walker in that second round. I expect him in some of the high stakes drafts, guys, to move up into that like solid first round, like pick 10, pick 11. All that happens, you know, in the preseason, if they give him time, if they give him some work and he breaks a long run, it's like game over. You'll see him going at like pick 7, pick 8. If you like the Chiefs infrastructure, which most fantasy players do, why wouldn't you want the uncontested running back who's going to get most of the work there? And if Patrick Mahomes, who I think is a favorite now to start week one, is healthy, that's wheels up, man. That's only good for Kenneth Walker.
So, Alan, we talked to you last week about Kenneth Gainwell, who basically steps into the Rashad White role in Tampa Bay. And, you know, we'll see what's going on with Bucky Irving. It's not been a banner offseason for him from a health standpoint. But I think it kind of felt like Rashad White had started to wear out his welcome in Tampa Bay. He had fallen out of favor. All of a sudden, he lands in Washington, and now everybody is back in on Rashad White.
The problem with Rashad White was that he was signed for the vet's minimum. He's not making, if you're a follow the money type of fantasy football drafter, then this is not for you. The bull case for him in fantasy is that look at the depth chart. They have Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt, aka Bill, who was a seventh rounder that, you know, showed flashes, but hardly has, you know, taken control of that backfield. And then you have a rookie in Catron Allen, who might be a game day inactive. Rashad White, who's already been a top five, top eight type of running back in fantasy football, is set up to, if he can handle it and if he breaks out, I mean, if he has a good camp, could end up being the lead running back, and his sixth, seventh, or even eighth round ADP, depending on where you draft, is going to look like a steal, especially that he has pass catching chops too, guys.
Alan, awesome stuff, man. Appreciate you giving us some of your time. We'll be sure to have you back plenty in the lead up to what most would consider fantasy football draft season starting up in the next few weeks here. Again, put in that code VSIN, VSIN, over at rotowire.com. Get yourself 15% off anything we offer as we ramp up our fantasy football offerings. We get ahead to break, but when we come back, we'll give you our official plays for the Home Run Derby tonight. Get into some NFL division futures as well. You're watching Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. We'll be right back.
Washing Prop Points on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Football season is right around the corner, and DraftKings is bringing you their biggest best ball contest ever. We're talking a massive $20 million in total prizes, making this the largest best ball tournament in DraftKings history. And this year, not just one, but three players will walk away as millionaires. And right now, our partners at DraftKings are giving all customers a can't-miss offer. Draft one, get one. Enter a lineup in the $20 million best ball contest for just $25, and you'll receive a bonus best ball ticket to play again free for a share of $20 million, giving you a second shot to be crowned a millionaire. It's simple. Just draft your team once, no weekly management required, and let your top scorers automatically start each week. All season long, every breakout star, every clutch play, every touchdown counts towards your shot at a share of $20 million. Download the DraftKings Daily Fantasy app and enter a lineup in the $20 million best ball contest for just $25 to get a bonus ticket to play free for another shot to win big. That's two shots without ever setting your lineups again in DraftKings' biggest best ball contest ever. Draft one, get one, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours in partnership with DraftKings. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY. In Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. 18 plus in most states. Restrictions apply. One per customer. Enter the Best Ball 20 million headliner contest to get one bonus entry. $25 entry fee required. Reward expires at contest lock on September 9th, 2026. See terms at DraftKings.com/promotions. Sponsored by DraftKings. Welcome back into Prop Points here on the Sports Betting Network. Nick Whale and Jeff Erickson hanging out with you, taking you up to the top of the hour. Money moves, of course, coming your way next. So we'll give you some home run derby props to end things out. But before that, Jeff, we want to use some of this downtime in the sports calendar to start taking an early look at some NFL futures. So we'll go division by division over the next couple of days and give you our leans. Let's start in the AFC East. Jeff, this is one of maybe only one or two divisions in the NFL where it truly feels like a two-team race. You know, it would be shocking to me if the New York Jets or the Miami Dolphins are remotely in contention to win this division over the second half of the year. So it certainly feels like it's Buffalo, your betting favorite, minus 125 versus New England, plus 120. They have comparable schedules on paper. It's going to be a big step up in competition for the Patriots after that historically soft schedule a year ago. But as you break this one down, what's your lean right now, Buffalo versus New England?
I have a small lean towards New England, but it's very small. I mean, both have comparably tough schedules. We were filling in the outline for the show today, and we both had schedule-related comments, and I think we both used the phrase historically easy or historic schedule in connection with the Patriots. But they didn't stand still, and that's what I really like about the Pats. Obviously, the A.J. Brown trade was big as far as that goes. But on top of that, signing Romeo Dobbs as well was another nice touch. I think, going out and getting a tackle in the draft was another nice touch there. They're not really as reliant as they are last year. Some of the weaker parts are their offensive line. We saw what happened with Will Campbell in the Super Bowl and in the playoffs as a whole. Yes, was he playing hurt? Yes, he was. But he also was also a little weak in terms of the pass pro anyhow going into the playoffs. So this is an upgrade perhaps, and they can maybe move him inside, or at least they're less reliant on him. They're not forced to play him. I think they're healthier now. We'll see if they can get through the season healthy, but I do think you're going to see a step up in the quality of this passing game.
It's slightly in toward New England for me as well. I do want to see if anything comes with the Vrabel situation. I think that's finally mm-hmm. faded away over the summer, but I don't know that the door is completely closed on that being something that New England has to deal with in some way this season. And with Buffalo, I think in theory you perhaps have a higher ceiling now without Sean McDermott, but I think you also risk the floor falling out of what has just been a really, really steady operation as long as Josh Allen has been Josh Allen. So I get why the Bills are favored, but I think it's going to be really interesting, Jeff, to see how the Bills come out of the gates. Like, this is their schedule to begin the year: at Houston, home against Detroit, home against the Chargers, home against New England, and then at the LA Rams. I mean, there are no gimmies over the first 5 weeks of the year. The schedule does soften up a bit in the middle portion, but they also play at Green Bay, at Denver, in out-of-division games later in the season. So even though that schedule is tougher for New England, it's not like it's dramatically tougher than what Buffalo is facing. So it's a reason those teams sitting minus 125 and plus 120 respectively. Let's go over to your territory in the AFC North, where we have Baltimore at minus 115. We have Cincinnati plus 194. And I'll throw the Steelers in this. I think the Steelers have earned that respect. Plus 510 as the third short shot. We're not going to mention the Cleveland Browns here. But my question to you, Jeff, as a Bengals guy, is there value right now on Cincinnati at almost 2-1?
Yeah, I almost need you to kind of talk me out of this one here, because I have as much optimism as I've had for a Bengals season in a long time. They are very un-Bengals like this offseason. First of all, they spent money in free agency. You know, Brian Cook, Boy Mafe, Jonathan Allen. They also traded their first-round pick for Dexter Lawrence. You know, a targeted acquisition. The player they absolutely needed. The very rare type of difference maker in that interior defensive line you just can't find either in the free agent market or in the draft. I thought that was – I'm really buying into this. You have to really buy into the notion that the pass rush cures a lot of ills and that Lawrence will make that linebacker core a much, much better team. They also have a much easier schedule this year. Whether you go by Warren Sharp, the third easiest schedule, or even Aaron Schatz, who says that the Bengals may have the easiest schedule in the NFL right now this year. I think getting plus money, plus 194, for a team that has beaten the Baltimore Ravens before, there's a lot of familiarity there, and the Ravens are an excellent team. The Steelers are an excellent team, but there's a lot of things in the Bengals' favor this year.
I'm with you on that, and I think I need to see it from Baltimore as well. I mean, I think there are some obvious reasons we could point to for why last season went like it did, primarily Lamar Jackson barely being healthy. But I still thought there were just some kind of overall concerning signs for the Ravens, you know, kind of the stopping and starting of that offense. Even when Lamar was back, it never really looked like they were in full gear. And again, they're another team that brought in a coach that could elevate this team, but there could also be some bumps in the road early on. So I think the door is open for Cincinnati. I like that price at plus 194. Would you rule out the Pittsburgh Steelers, Jeff? A question that you've had to ask yourself in this division for the last 20 years. Can we write them off?
Hey, they won the division last year when we were kind of writing them off.
They sure did.
They have Aaron Rodgers again. And that's, you know, limits. There's a limiting factor to the offense, the type of plays they can call, even though they've improved their receiving core. I think going out, getting Michael Pittman, Jeremy Bernard, I think these were both really good additions to the team, but it still starts with the quarterback there. I'm optimistic about the defense. Already 11th in defensive DVOA last year. Adding Patrick Graham, the former Raiders defensive coordinator, who I think worked miracles with a really bad talent squad in Las Vegas last year. I think he's going to be a good addition to this team. I thought it was a very good hire. At plus 510, I can see it. I will say their schedule is the only schedule in the division that's even like league average. The other three teams have very easy schedules, and that will work against Pittsburgh.
Okay, we'll go quickly on the AFC South before we give you our official home run derby plays. Houston, plus 110 to win the division. Jacksonville, plus 245. The Colts, plus 380. We'll see if Tennessee can work its way into that mix. My question to you, though, Jeff, is are you surprised by the price difference between Houston and Jacksonville? Because I think if you polled 100 people, you might get 50% saying they like the Jags, 50% saying they like Houston, but Texans growing a bigger and bigger favorite in the AFC South.
Yeah, I'd like to get your answer on your very own question here, Nick, because you're the local Jacksonville expert here. But I love Houston this year. I love their defense. I like what they did to their offensive line. I like the Montgomery acquisition. Jacksonville did more subtraction than addition, at least in terms of name value. But yeah, I am surprised by this price. What say you, Nick?
I'm very worried about what the first half of the season is going to look like for the Jags. They're not going to be able to afford to kind of work their way up as they did last year, where they went on that run to end the regular season, obviously ended up coming up short in the playoffs. They get Cleveland week one. After that, at Denver, home against New England, at Cincy, against Philly, Houston, Indy, Baltimore are the next seven games. If they come out of that stretch 4-4, I think you live with that. But I do worry if Trevor Lawrence, as he has in the past, you know, needs a couple of months to kind of work his way into form. I don't know that Jacksonville can afford that in the same way that it did a year ago. So we have the home run derby tonight. We've been teasing it the whole show, Jeff. Who are we officially locking in as your derby winner play?
Okay. I think Kyle Schwarber is appropriately the favorite. And I don't even think his price is that bad at 3-1, but it's no fun betting favorites on something like this. And when I'm in Vegas, I don't usually bet the favorite. We've been in Vegas many times for the Home Run Derby. I'm going Jack Caglione at 7-1 at DK. 93 mile an hour average exit velocity, 116 max exit velocity, same universe as the top power hitters, and a better price for a left-handed hitter in Citizens Bank Ballpark.
What I would give to be sitting in the hot tub down at Circa Stadium Swim tonight watching the Home Run Derby. But alas, right. We'll be doing it from the basement here in Milwaukee. Give me Junior Caminero, 4-1 at FanDuel. I don't know how we don't take Caminero, Jeff. 13 homers in his last 19 games. 18% of his at-bats in that span have resulted in a home run. We'll have Derby recap coming for you tomorrow. Some more NFL futures talk, more Summer League talk throughout the week here on Prop Points. Money moves coming your way next. Stay tuned. We'll